Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It will be a fight.
And there'll be a lot of death, unfortunately.
It will be a fight we will win.
But a lot less death. But there will be death.
People should be actually kept out of the country for at least 28 days.
America is not prepared.
G'day, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Butterfield Effect for another week. Thanks for joining us. Do you know that this podcast is available on Spotify? Are you already on Spotify and I'm already double handling this information to you? Good fucking on you. Anyway, if you're not on Spotify, go and check it out immediately. Ladies and gentlemen, it is just a marvelous opportunity for us to enjoy this guest that is coming up today. And that is none other than my old pal, Neil Kolhatkar. Neil has been involved in the YouTubes and the comedy scene in Australia for a very long time. He is a very funny man. He's a humorous individual. And first time I met Neil was actually when I booked him for a show in Newcastle many moons ago. I enjoyed this conversation with Neil. I always enjoy my conversations with Neil. He's a very smart man, a very interesting man, and I think you'll enjoy my conversation with Neil Kolhatkar. Kolhatkar, welcome to the show. Great to have you here, bloody etc.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
What are you doing? What's happening?
Oh, just today or in general?
What is that thing in front of your face there? Is that a microphone?
Yes, it's a Blue Snowball USB mic.
Oh my God.
I haven't used this baby for a while, but yeah. I'm not used to having this big ball up in my face, but yeah,
well, you know, you got to mix things up in lockdown.
Pandemic, right?
Yeah, I see you doing and the map of the world behind you, planning your world domination. How's that going?
Oh, good so far. You know, I've probably got a few more million subscribers to go before I can elicit enough influence to, take over the world. But I think having the world behind me is a good start.
Fucking oath. And I see you doing a lot of boxing. What's happening there?
Look, when the pandemic hit, the gyms closed and, that was my main source of exercise. But my trainer that I used to do group lessons with was offering some private lessons and I thought, why not? And just got really into it.
So you're looking sharp. You've got a very quick jab on you. That's something I've always struggled with because I do a bit of boxing myself. I'm not very good, but
yep.
The jab is one of the things that I've always struggled with. And John Wayne Parr, who is a Muay Thai fighter of the Gold Coast, his double jab and even triple jab is exquisite. The way that he moves in general when it comes to striking is just, it's like a dance. And the way that John, he lived in Thailand for a long time and everything he does is flowing and beautiful. And it's just marvelous to see him to move around the gym. He tried to teach me there for a while and I was just absolutely hopeless as a pure white boy who can't dance and can barely move as it is. It was a tough ask for him to try to teach me the ways of the martial artist.
Well, look, I think I've seen a few videos of you as well. You've got the reach, you've got the strength. So I don't know if you really need the dancing ability there, but no, when you've done more martial arts, you come to really appreciate the artistry of it. And like you said, it really is like a dance. The best boxers out there, they flow so, it's magnificent watching it.
Yeah, it's effortless. Definitely. It seems effortless. There's a lot of training that's gone behind every single fighter that people sit and they admire. But when you see people like even Robert Whittaker, when he was fighting Yoel Romero for the second fight, there was a triple jab that he threw. And I'd been working on my jab at the time. And I know we've already covered jabs, but I was working on my jab at the time. And the way that he threw that triple jab was just, it was like it was slow motion. It was perfect. And Romero ate all three jabs. And I was just like, holy shit, this guy is like This is just a whole nother level of professional. But
but it physical takes poetry.
Yeah, yeah. What is what does Rogan always say? Well, it's not about
analysis. I've heard.
Sorry, say it again.
That's just the best way of describing it. I think physical poetry or physical chess is another way I've heard, and it's been described. And I mean, I know Lomachenko actually. I think it was him, but his dad actually said to him, before you become a boxer, go and take some dancing classes. And I know a lot of the South American boxers, they also do the tango and they do. That just could be a South American thing. I'm not sure. But
well, I think it's
proficient dancers.
Yeah, it's got a lot to do with beat and how it sort of plays through your body. Mm-hmm. Like this morning at my training, Coach Paulie, Warrior World Gym in Newcastle, by the way. And next time you're down there, you have to come along. It's the best gym in the city.
Definitely.
And he had, just while we were just doing some pad work and some partner drills, he had some drum beats playing in the background. So each round, the drum beat would like increase and it would go like, duh, 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 and then it would increase the next round. And, you know, you were throwing your combinations, but you were throwing every single time the drum beat. So you'd have to change how you would throw a punch and then throw a kick and then make sure that it was in time. All to give you the sort of sense that there is time in a combination rather than just throw bah, 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 bah. Like you can throw it bah, 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 like you would in a real fight. And I think that was really interesting. And the reason Paulie was saying to do this is when the chips are down, you know how to focus yourself when, you know, you need to throw a certain combination when someone's coming at you and there's not time to react. You know, your body knows where you need to be at that time.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And look, I'm not as much of an expert as these guys, but I've definitely found myself enjoying it a lot more when I've got my iPod on and at the heavy bag of my gym, just trying to actually jab and cross to the beats. It's fun. It's like a dance. And it doesn't even feel like cardio. It doesn't feel like exercise. I genuinely just enjoy it. I look forward to it. I've been trying to do it every day as well. So, yeah, look, I've been really enjoying that. It's kept me fit throughout lockdown. And it's good. It's a really good exercise, right? Because it works your muscles and your fitness and cardio. So anything like that, I'm really interested in. You know, swimming is another good one like that. All the swimming pools closed. So, yeah, martial arts, especially boxing, big fan.
Have you thought about, like, jiu-jitsu as another discipline to focus on?
Yeah, so right now I'm also doing Taekwondo. I'm a brown belt, so not too far off. I haven't posted much about that, though.
Yeah, I didn't know you were a brown belt.
Yeah, no, I'm keeping that one a secret. Well, not anymore, obviously, but I'm keeping that one till I get the coveted black belt. Then yeah. I'll spruik it a little bit. But I said to myself, once I get to black belt in Taekwondo, then I'll try my hand in BJJ. So then that's the three main... forms covered, right? You got your striking, you got your punching, and then you got the grappling.
I think for jiu-jitsu particularly, it's just such a great way to experience what it's like to be in the worst possible situation. And, you know, if you're someone who has been, you know, you're in a fight or someone's attacked you and you're on your back or they've got your back, and most people have no idea what to do. Like, do you just spaz out and try and get out of it? Or are you able to, and this is what jiu-jitsu has taught me, to center myself, and not in like this weird meditation term, but really center yourself in your own mind and not freak out and know what to do. Know exactly what to do, how to push someone in the right position that benefits you and they don't know that it benefits you. And then to have the ability to finish them or to choke them out or break their arm or whatever you have to do to protect yourself. I think it's so important for a lot of people who are trying to find some purpose and particularly with men, I mean, young women as well, but particularly with men, to have something to, like, I love playing rugby league, but you can't go 100% all the time at training. When you're training jiu-jitsu, you can go 100% and you're not going to get too hurt. Which I think is a great outlet for young men. And I know on your podcast you talk a lot about, and with Geordie's as well,
He talks a lot about young men, and I think it's important that people who are in a position of having influence over people to talk about those type of things. But I think having that outlet, and I don't know, maybe it's the same in Taekwondo as well, that outlet and also that discipline that a martial art requires. And I'm certainly not one of these people who is super disciplined. I'm just not. I am with some things.
Neither am I.
I am with my diet and with my work, very disciplined. But when it comes to making sure I'm at jiu-jitsu every week, it just doesn't happen because work gets in the way and all those things. It's something I'd like to focus on more, but I haven't.
I was just going to say, it's so remarkably rewarding improving with a martial art or any sort of physical discipline in that regard, because, you know, I always lifted weights and I went to the gym and it was great to see progress there, but there's nothing more fulfilling than, you know, you start off unable to even do a roundhouse kick, and then a few months go by and you're like, oh, wow, hang on a minute. I've actually got a bit of power now. I can get a bit more height. And then a year goes by and you've got a great roundhouse kick. And it's just, it sounds so simple, but it's very rewarding and it has so many beneficial aspects. As you said, especially for young men, it teaches them discipline. It keeps them fit, keeps them strong. And, you know, if worse comes to worse, you've got some skills. If you really need to defend yourself. And that's a big thing for me. I want to give myself the best chance to survive if I'm ever in that situation, touch wood, hopefully I'm not, but that's a big part of it for me. And just the like I said before, the artistry of it, and it's so mental as well, right? You know, I've been sparring a little bit. I'm not that good. It really humbles you when you start sparring with guys who are have been doing it a lot longer than you have. And so much of it is just staying cool under pressure and staying calm and sticking to your combinations and to your strategy, even when you've been hit a few times. So I love it. I can't say enough positive words about it. And I think it sounds like you're the same.
Yeah. And I think the great thing about jiu-jitsu when it comes to, and with striking and maybe not so much with boxing, because with boxing, like obviously there's a supreme amount of skill that goes into the best in the world, but you can walk into a gym and if you can throw a real heavy punch, you could knock someone out.
It's very, yes.
But like
definitely
ego is with jiu-jitsu mainly left at the door. And I think that's really important, because someone like me, who's a 6'8" man with a beard who weighs 115 kilos, 114 this morning, doing not bad. But anyway, nice. And they can destroy me. You know, if they're 60 kilos ring and wet and they know what they're doing, they can destroy me. And there's very few sports where that can happen. And I think that's one of the most beneficial things. It just makes you leave your ego at the door. And there's not many things in life that really make that happen for a young dude.
Yeah. And then those sort of humbling experiences are the catalyst for the most growth. I know they have been with my life, you know, when I've challenged myself and things that I've previously avoided or dismissed when I was younger. You know, I was never really that much of a physical guy when I was younger. You know, I played a bit of sport. I was a swimmer, and I was a swimming teacher for a while. But I was never big into contact sports or, you know, I never really just saw that as my realm, if you will. And as I've gotten older, I've gotten more in touch with that side of me, and it's great. I feel so much more confident. I feel strong, and I just can't. I know I've been saying this a lot already, but I just cannot recommend it enough for, especially for young guys out there that might not be the most confident, that might be dealing with some insecurity and. Things might not be going your way in life. Try your hand at a martial art. I don't know, it's something Joe Rogan professes and talks about so much.
Oh, constant. And it's so true, though.
He's like, right. He's 100% right.
I was just going to pull this up really quick, using my supreme skills here. I'm just going to go to Twitter. And I know. Oh, mate, somebody stop me. If you can't see what I'm, if you're listening to this, it's a guy called Jason K, And he tweeted me last night and he said, thank you. Thank you. Last year, I watched one of your videos and it changed my life. I stopped blaming other people and looked at what I was doing wrong. And now I feel the best I've ever felt. Compare Christmas this year to now, last year to now. And this is the gentleman here. This is Jason. He's a bigger dude. He's working on his car there or someone's car. And obviously he's quite overweight. And then you go to this year and have a go at him. Like, he's dropped.
Wow.
I mean, if you compare the pair, he must have dropped, 45 kilos, and he's looking marvelous, and
that's great,
and which is wonderful, and which makes me feel really good because he said that I've seen the video, and motivation is wonderful, but it's something that has to be taken consistently, like a vitamin, and there's no doubt that great, he saw my video and changed something about what he does, but it was up to him. And that's something that, I think you learn over time as you get older as well, that whatever you want to do in your life, it comes down to you. No one else can do it for you. It must be done by yourself. And that's what I worry about. And I talk about this a lot in my videos, is this victimhood culture of people where it is everyone else's fault but your own. And there are things in life that go wrong that are terrible and horrible, and you can't change it and no one else can really change it. But even with those, sometimes you have to just accept them. And obviously that's very difficult for a lot of different things. But you have to accept them and then work out how we can make them better. Because if you continuously just lay down in life, life will eat you.
Mm.
And 100%. I worry about that with young dudes and young women, particularly the ones that are involved with my YouTube channel and my comedy. And I try and put this message out there where I can, that you can change yourself, just like that young man, just like I did when I first dropped 35 or 37 kilos, whatever it was. It is doable, but it takes a lot of hard effort and a lot of change, and a lot of people aren't willing to do that. They're just not.
It's very seductive to fall for an ideology or a set of beliefs and a narrative that absolves you of personal responsibility. Now, I think personal responsibility can be taken to an extreme degree. And I think not everyone is born equal by any means. And some people are going to have it a lot harder than other people. Mm-hmm. But the chances are there's someone out there that's had it a lot harder than you, and they've managed to better themselves. So I try to live by that mantra as much as I possibly can. Take personal responsibility for my flaws and things that aren't necessarily going well for me in life. But at the same time, I really try to help other people. And sometimes being generous and being charitable is what someone needs to get back up on their feet. So then they can take personal responsibility. So there's a bit of nuance there, but I'm definitely with you that is the philosophy that will bring you the most peace, and it will bring you most fulfillment in life.
And I, to what I said before, to my point, a lot of people are unable to pull themselves up by their bootstraps. Like, that's just, for a lot of people, that's not possible. And I get that. If you were born in a shit community, you've got shit role models, you've got a shit roll of the dice, it's very easy for you to just run the course alive. But I think something as simple as sitting there and saying, this isn't for me, is the first step to changing everything and changing the tune of your life. And I see it so much in social media now, that everything wrong in my life, my mental health, my physical health, everything is someone else's fault. And when you take that tone, I don't think there's any room for you to improve even 1%, because 1% improvement is so worth it. Wherever it happens to be in your life, whether it's your relationship, whether it's your relationship with food, whether it's your relationship with exercise, or whether it's your fucking punting ability. If you can increase it by 1%, that's a positive thing. So,
without a doubt.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it sort of doesn't keep me awake, but it's something that I'm always constantly thinking about, is how I can use my platform to not inspire people. I don't want to inspire people, just give them the option of going, or the possibility of going, hey, maybe we can change our lives just a tiny bit.
I'm with you there as well. You know, I don't claim to be some kind of a life coach, or I don't claim to know all the answers, but I can only attest to what's worked for me from when I was a teenager to now, which it's not too long. It's about 10 years, but I've learned a few things, and now I've been trying to talk about that a bit more on my second channel, and with the podcast I'm doing with Jordan and the new podcast I'm doing with Eliza. And I've been getting a few messages like that as well. And it's really rewarding, man. It's it feels great when you've made a difference with people.
So what's your second channel? Neil TV, yeah?
Yeah, youtube.com/NeilTV.
And what are you doing with that? Why the change from the first channel to the second one as well?
Oh, so I'm still, I don't even see it as my second channel now, right? I see it as, well, my serious channel. It's just a different arm of my brand, or just who I am as a person and as an entertainer. So the main channel, it's all my comedy, right? I'll never stop making comedy. It's my life. I really do think it's my calling. And, you know, I'll never, ever stop doing that. I'm still posting a lot of character comedy, a lot of sketches. The funny thing with COVID and the lockdown is that I suddenly have a lot more time to make sketches, as I'm sure you would be in the same boat as well, because stand-up comedy and live shows, even though they'd take up 1 hour a night performing live, mentally they can be quite draining, especially if you're at a festival for 30 nights and, you know, you want to prepare throughout the day. And if you have a normal routine, you're not necessarily in the best mind state to perform live. Now, as I've gotten older, I've gotten a lot better at that, and I have employed certain techniques to get into the appropriate mindset for stand-up. But what coronavirus has done for me, at least, is given me the space and the freedom to just explore this other avenue for me. And I started the podcast with Jordan last year, and it's evolved, but it's a weird mesh of banter and philosophy and politics and culture. And there's nothing really like that out there. I don't think there's that kind of synthesis between, you know, two young dudes just bantering as they do, but then traversing into really serious kind of topics. So I think we've given something that people haven't necessarily heard or seen before. And the other one I've started is called Sex Sells. And I wanted to do one with a woman, because I find there are a lot of podcasts out there that are either, you know, all guys or two guys, and or vice versa. There's a lot of all female podcasts. And right now we seem to live in this perpetual state of gender conflict, where there's this race to the bottom about who has it worse. You know, oh, women have it worse in this regard. No, men have it worse here. So I thought, let's try to get to the bottom of this. Let's actually try to discuss some of these concerns and issues without just preaching to the choir and giving into echo chambers. So I found Eliza, who's she's a relationship therapist and a sexologist. I didn't even know that was a thing.
Sexologist.
Yeah. Sounds fun. No, it's just the study of sex, basically. But she's very, very educated, and she's perfect to, you know, unpack and discuss those issues. And it's been going well.
Have you brought up the topic of conversation with her as far as the sexologist is concerned about certain individuals having a penchant for eating ass?
Oh, not yet. We haven't done a fetish episode yet, but I'm sure that will come to the fore. Because
would you call that a fetish? Because
it's a preference. I don't know if it's a particular fetish, but
there's a friend of mine. I won't name names, but he's a big fan of it. He's always tagging me in memes on Facebook about eating ass.
Sounds like a good guy. I'd imagine, you know, it takes some bravery to do that, to get down there. So. You know, I'm sure he's a good guy to do a podcast with.
He's a great guy. We're talking about Neil. Yeah. But hey, if you're not eating,
look, it's a bit of a phase, man. Like, I don't, when I talked to you about it 2 years ago, I don't even know what it was. But
why did we start talking about that? We're at a Christmas party.
You brought it up, man. No. I don't know. Hey, you brought it up here, but
I certainly didn't bring it.
Can't remember. I think our friend Elliot was telling us a story, and then I made a remark, and then one thing led to another, and I just something about it. I was really obsessed with it then. It's petered out a little bit. I still, you know, I'm involved in it.
Get back, Neil.
I know, like, I'm very, you know, that term is used a lot these days, but I'm very fluid with my preferences when it comes to
And you're allowed to be. There's nothing wrong with that. If you're not eating your girl's ass, someone else is.
That's exactly it. And anyone who hasn't done it yet, it's like what I was saying with martial arts, right? It takes
discipline.
And are
you also a brown belt in eating ass?
brown in many ways, right? So we call it a brown tongue. But it gives you the same benefits that boxing and taekwondo does. So yeah, if you've eaten ass, right, you can do anything. So
yeah. I think if you feel
words
like
to live by.
I think that's actually in 12 Rules for Life, Jordan Peterson's book.
That's the 13th rule.
Cat and eat the ass.
Not the cat's ass. Don't do that.
That's
bordering bestiality. But
bordering. That's not bordering.
What is it?
Of course.
How do you actually define the bestiality? Does the penetration have to take place? Well, or
I think if you engage with an animal in a sexual act, like if you accidentally touch an animal's asshole. You know, it's not a good thing. I wouldn't go out there to do it. Accidentally. Like Littlefoot, my dog, right? Sometimes in the morning, he sleeps in our bed. And if he gets up in the morning, he'll do a big stretch. And often, the first thing I see in the morning is Littlefoot's bum hole pointed at me in like an intimidating fashion. But that's not bestiality. That's just being in the room. But
that's true.
If you go out of your way, like
if you put your tongue out.
If you had your tongue out, like I've heard stories, right? I heard this story about this dude that used to break into farms, and he would break into the farm and he would go out of his way to have sex with the cattle there, but he wouldn't.
Okay.
He admitted to this in court, but he denied furiously that he had sex with the male cattle because he didn't want people to think he was gay.
Right. Okay. So it was more concerned about being seen as gay than being seen as an animal fucker.
Which, what does that say about our society?
Oh, that says a lot about him personally. I don't know about our society, but...
what does it say
about... Yeah, I think he's got his priorities a bit messed up there.
Yeah, I mean, sure. Isn't it funny how we went from talking about the philosophy of your own victimhood mentality to talking about pulled pork?
I think it's great. I don't think it's funny at all. I think it's just a natural flow of the conversation.
Well, I'd be very interested to know what the sexologist has to say about eating ass, because it is a very interesting and it's a very new
analingus is the appropriate term, I believe.
Analingus. I think that's a Cardi B album. Anyway, So tell me, as far as your YouTube channel, your main YouTube channel, I know you put longer.
Yep.
So when I make a video, it takes me about a week. I make two videos a week, and that's what I use the week before to write. But you put a lot of effort in. It must take a lot longer to create something.
With the short films I make, they take months. So writing it is it's quite a lengthy process, more so because I want to refine it as much as possible and really get my point across. I'm really careful about exactly what I'm saying with those short films. And then I do, I produce the whole thing. So I get on board, you know, a producer and DOP and cameraman and all the assistants, assistant directors, the actors. And I try to pay them as much as I can, you know, you don't make a huge amount just from short films on YouTube, unless they go viral. So one or two of mine have been quite lucrative, but it's a full production. So sometimes it's taken over a year to get the final product out there, because editing can be quite arduous, because we're sitting there, you know, the director, myself and the editor, trying to perfect every single shot, the musical score, the sound, the mixing, all of it comes together. But it's so rewarding. There's nothing more rewarding than when a short film, or I could imagine a feature film, comes together, because what it does is it combines so many artistic components. You know, you've got the dialogue, which is, you've got the story, the plot, you've got the acting, you've got all the imagery based on the shots and the scenes and the way that the camera is positioned, the film work in that regard, and the costume, the props, everything comes together for one final product. So I love filmmaking. I you know, as much as I love stand-up comedy, I also really, really love filmmaking. It's a lot harder to do it in this climate, because it's not, you don't make a lot of money doing it, but it is a passion that I like to do on the side while I'm still making the videos and doing stand-up.
How do you find that works? Because obviously YouTube is very much focused toward the 10-minute video that's, you know, like my style, where it's like, you know, there's jump cuts and all that shit that some people like, some people hate. And it's like, you know, it's always been there to sort of design to bring people in. Whether or not that still works, I don't know. Do you think that short films have a place, or, well, maybe that's not the right question. Do you think that YouTube is the place where short films belong?
Well, I think YouTube is just the video platform everyone is on nowadays, at least. Although I actually like what Facebook's doing with their video platform. I could imagine in another year or two, they're going to be just as good, maybe even better than YouTube. I know, I've completely forgotten the name of it, but there's a video platform out there that is a bit more catered towards filmmaking and short films. I've just mind blanked on the Vimeo. That's right. Vimeo. There's just not a lot of people on there. No. In fact, it's very industry based. So in the same way, I don't like just trying to appease comedians. I don't like just trying to appease other filmmakers and other people in the industry, because they have a warped idea of what is, what, you know, the general populace would enjoy. So, I'm always inclined to put my content on whatever will amass the largest potential audience. So YouTube is the place for me to put the films out there. Now, yeah, the algorithm and the way YouTube following and the way YouTube is designed nowadays, definitely it's an advantage to be as regular with your uploads and to have longer uploads now as well. So I found that out, I'd say, the hard way 2 or 3 years ago, when I said, okay, I'm no longer going to do comedy sketches. I just want to be a filmmaker and a stand-up comedian. And I would post a stand-up clip maybe once every few weeks and a short film maybe twice a year. And all the engagement, all the subscribers, they just dropped off. They, not entirely, but a lot of them did. And I think you got to play the game, man. Like, I think I could have just sort of complained about it, like a lot of people in the film industry do. But I just thought to myself, no, this is the passion. This is the side project, but I need to make this a viable business. So, I went back into regular comedy uploads, and that's the bread and butter for me. The podcasts, the comedy uploads, and don't get me wrong, I absolutely love doing those as well. I really, really enjoy them, and they're fun, but they're also engaging and interesting for me. But the real passion, is stand up and filmmaking, and that's where I put most of my artistic energy and most of my intellectual energy towards. I've learned and I've sort of figured out a way to still maintain a very prominent and regular social media presence while still being able to do short films and stand up comedy when I can.
Do you regret not keeping that upload? Because that's one of the fears that I have is dropping off. And mm-hmm. And I the longest I've taken off is like 2 weeks in 3 years, I think, from two videos a week. Wow. And that's scary. You're like, yeah. You know, it's a fear, because when I have a video,
and it doesn't do well, but that shit scares me, because this is my income, this is my life, this is what's gonna put my kids through school. Obviously, you know, I'm doing the most I can to sort of you know, not put all my eggs in one basket, but there is always that fear there that something will go wrong, or even the fear for me that fucking YouTube will go, not anymore, Butterfield, piss off. Like, that's always deplatforming and stuff. Like, I don't think I'm that controversial, but I guess it depends who you ask. Like, I really like Friendly Geordies, but a lot of my audience doesn't like him, and a lot of his audience fucking hates me. Like, I am the I am the devil for those people. Well, not all of them, but some of them. I've read the comments. Fuck you. But you know, there's always that fear there. And did you find that was a regret of yours, or do you think that it led you in a positive direction?
Yeah, hindsight is a good thing, and I wouldn't do that if I had my time again. But it made me realize the importance of the regular uploads, and well, I think you got to find that fine balance between, well, for me at least, because what I do, right, with the characters and the sketches, even earlier this year, I tried to commit to two videos a week, but the quality just went down so much that the overall views, even with two videos, went down. So I've always found the perfect balance for me is one comedy video a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then with some of the other stuff I'm doing on the Neil TV channel now, I'm a lot more regular with those uploads. We all have those fears now, because, like, I mean, I don't think I'm controversial at all. Of course, I'm biased towards myself there. But, you know, seeing some of the people who are getting, you know, quote unquote, cancelled and being socially shamed, social media shamed, I'm worried about that too. I'm really worried about that. And ultimately, YouTube is a private company, and they do have the liberty to just to ban people without even notifying them. So
often it comes from a weird place too. Like that whole Christchurch joke for me, where people demanded my deplatforming. Like, I didn't even think about that. That wasn't something that was in the back of my mind. Like, oh my God, I hope that doesn't, I was going to say blow up. That's probably a bad choice of words. I hope that doesn't, that doesn't, like, you know, turn into a big situation. Like, who knows? Like, you know, I think for people who are in the public eye, like, it happens out of the blue sometimes. And there's something that comes out and you're like, oh shit. Like, I forgot about that, but fuck me. That's okay. Now we deal with this now, you know?
Yeah. It's a tough one, right? Because I don't ever want to censor myself or censor what I say, but I'm trying to take as many steps possible to being as independent as I possibly can. I just haven't, you know, the biggest step would be just posting videos to a website on some other video platform, but that I'm not there yet. But, you know, I don't even use Patreon now anymore. So it's a risk that you take being on, you know, any social media platform. And I do think, I don't think social media platforms should be heavily regulated. I think they are ultimately private companies. I don't agree with what their, you know, their policy, their very vague policy on hate speech and their demonetization and all of that. But I also do agree that they, as a private company, have the right to do that. And I think we, as, you know, as people who with profiles on that social media site, we accept the terms that come with that.
Well, that's the funny one, isn't it? Like, you don't want regulation, because who wants their government dictating what is the
exactly
the terms? But also, when there's private companies who are as large and as powerful as governments, where is the line? And that's the thing that I don't think anyone has the appropriate answer to.
Yeah. Mm. It's a tough one, isn't it? Because this is very new territory that we're treading in. You know, nothing like this has ever happened historically. And, you know, there's regulation going the other way now with that code that you did a great video on that is coming. I don't. Did that get passed in the Australian Parliament? Because it's a terrible law, and it's definitely over-regulation in my estimation. And these are old and poorly modelled large media conglomerates that are basically trying to obtain an unfair advantage on social media, because one, they simply can't compete, and they have the connections in the government to do that.
Yeah.
So
it's new media trying to crush old media because they haven't adapted, and it's just exactly lazy. It's lazy, lazy business by old fucking dinosaurs. That's it.
Yep. Couldn't put it better myself. They just need to get with the times. They need to eat some ass.
They need to start eating ass on podcasts. No, it's literally. You should probably have your ass eaten.
Some views.
Start another podcast where the entire time you're getting your ass eaten. I would watch that for sure. It's for these people.
It's an OnlyFans idea, isn't it?
Why don't you have an OnlyFans? You're young. Look, you're fit.
I could. I don't know if anyone wants to see. It would just be me, eating ass. So I don't know if anyone wants to pay for that. I like to keep that private, I'm happy to post my comedy and my characters, but what happens in the bedroom, I like to keep in the bedroom. I don't want it, broadcast to the world. Thank you very much. Sure. I can talk about it, but I don't want people to see it. Not that I've got anything to be embarrassed about.
But there's a lot of people doing the OnlyFans. Like this video will go up next week, but my Monday video is about vegan gains. He started another.
Okay. Yeah, right. Well, because I've heard now that it's not always. I always thought OnlyFans was only, R-rated content.
Yeah. Well, Bella Thorne put up she made $2 million in a couple of days. She's a Disney, or used to be a Disney star. And now she made $2 million in two or three days. And she basically gypped everyone out of their cash because she's just posting the same photo she's put on Instagram. So everyone's filthy at her. But Vegan Gains, him and his wife are full blown assholes and vaginas and dicks. And it's a good watch. It cost me $18.50. A fantastic claim to the taxation department coming up in the 2020 and 2021 financial year. Looking forward to that, explaining that one to shout out to
I hope you get audited. I really hope you get audited. That would be hilarious.
Have an interview.
The treasurer. Yeah, look, Frydenberg, this was a business expense. I needed to see Vegan Gains dick for my business.
It's not a great dick, I'll be honest. But yeah, with the media bargaining code, that terrifies me because that is big business, sleeping with the government. And even with people who have these strange, so the ABC put out a video about it saying how great it is. And then Sky News put a video out about it saying how great it is. And then Media Watch, who was on the ABC, who has always been very, very fair, put out a video saying how wonderful it is. And I was just like, oh my God. Even Media Watch, they're coming out and it's like, you can't trust any of these pieces of shit on TV at all.
Yeah, they know they're dying. They're trying to cling on to whatever power they have. And look, even if this does get passed and it comes into effect, it's a small win for them, but they're losing the battle. They are, 10, 15 years, I don't even think they'll exist. Or if they do, they'll exist in a form that has, basically none of the power that they currently do. And it's really interesting, isn't it, with all these different forms of media, when you talk to people who still consume most of their content from mainstream media, they live in a different world.
Mm.
They have different ideas about what the appropriate actions for the government are, what the appropriate actions for something like this are. They're all in favor of this bargaining code because, well, it works as propaganda, ultimately. And you can't even reason with someone like that who's just consumed all this mainstream media. And
they are in a different world. And that's a very interesting way to put it, because there was a news flash on the other night, and I'm in Newcastle, NBN News, Paul Lobb came on, and I trust Paul. And he said,
words to the effect of about the protester at one of the rallies, one of the riots in America. He had a Molotov cocktail go off near him, and the news, the headline was, "What happens when peaceful protesting goes wrong?" I was like, "Well, that's not really." I don't think you can bring a Molotov cocktail to a peaceful protest and still call it a peaceful protest. Like setting fire to things, that's more rioting, is it not, Paul Lobb? I mean, that is the thing. And Paul Lobb, great journalist, and I love him, and please don't sue me. In fact, you know what? I'm wrong about him. He didn't even say that. The thing is that you are hearing completely different stories from completely different people about the same thing. And even when it comes to the old media, which is the newspapers and the nightly news, if you're watching Channel 7, you'll get a different story than Channel 10 and a different story to Channel 9 and a different story to the ABC, and Sky News will come in with something completely different. And then you hear another story from people online and you're like, well, hang on, where's the truth in this? That's crazy.
Yeah, the trust in media has completely eroded because, like you said,
rightfully so,
you just get conflicting narratives and you have no idea what the real truth is. And then who's to say that when media was trusted, it even should have been trusted? That's the sort of realization you come to when you start to, you know, understand how biased it can be these days.
I mean, look at the big...
I don't know what the solution is, but...
Look at the big report over time. Like JFK getting assassinated, that was just reported. I mean, I'm not going... I don't want to go full conspiratorial here, but that was reported by the news. The mainstream story, accepted. 9/11, accepted. Even Harold Holt going missing, fishing, accepted. Like, even I just... Whilst you were talking then, I was thinking, oh, well, maybe when Harold Holt did go missing, was that a little bit sus? Probably. It seems a bit sus. If Scott Morrison... was at
don't even think about these things.
No. If Scott Morrison tomorrow was playing golf and he went missing, do you think there'd be people questioning, oh, maybe something a little bit sus happened? Or what about Dan Andrews? If he suffocated from his mask, people would start questioning things. Like today, they would question. But back in the day, no questions whatsoever. They just accept the narrative. And I know when you say words like the narrative, people start going, oh, I'm not listening to this dickhead. But that is what it is.
Yeah, and I now just, I suppose I plead ignorance. I don't know. Unless I'm actually at an event or unless I have a first-hand account of the facts of something that's occurred, I'm just going to say, I don't know. I have no idea. I can't trust the agendas and the bias of anyone reporting on these things. So, I can assume there's maybe a grain of truth in what everyone says. So if you consume maybe opposing narratives, you might get to some semblance of the middle ground and the truth. But even then, it's too hard to really have a concrete idea of what the truth is, which is, that's insane when you think about it. Yeah. It's a bizarre world that, it's a bizarre media world and media landscape that we live in now. But it's quite interesting, actually, because when, you know, I've been doing this now nearly 10 years, and I remember when I started, and I was always of the belief, like, oh, the internet is the future. Everyone's going to be moving on to the internet. And people just laughed at that. They thought, oh, you're kidding yourself. You know, it'll be cat videos forever, or it'll just be, you know, silly teenagers doing accents forever. But no, I think I would say internet sources are more trusted now than many mainstream sources for definitely for people our age and around our generation. So who knows what it's going to look like in 10 years. It's scary, but I think there's also, it's somewhat exciting as well. You know, we're a part of this new landscape and we can help shape what the future media landscape is going to look like. And we can learn from what we're currently experiencing and what we have experienced and shape it to something that we're much more comfortable with and that, you know, the general population can be proud of or at least trust.
Yeah. And I think when you give the power to the people, which is what the internet is sort of there for, it builds trust.
And I don't think that when we're old men, when we're 70 years old, anyone's going to buy a newspaper. Like, there's just no way.
Oh, I reckon by the time we're 40.
Yeah.
I don't even think it'll be that long, because they're not making any money. The revenues are completely, with the way that digital media works these days, it's just not cost effective to be printing these papers and thousands of copies every day and then delivering them, and all those costs involved are exorbitant compared to creating a digital copy and emailing it to people. So
even writing a full story is a waste of time now.
And in many ways that can be quite unfortunate, because what you did get with the paper was, well, at least you sort of trusted that there was some integrity there and it wasn't all just tabloidy clickbait nonsense trying to grab people's attention and not make people think. But you know, I know my grandparents still, you know, they still get the paper, and I hope for the sake of the older generation it still is a service that is provided for at least the next couple of years. But yeah, I don't even think I maybe 10 years we'll see. I'll do another podcast in 10 years and see if newspapers still exist in the physical form.
I think that even the way that the news operates has to change, and hopefully this bargaining code disappears. Because I had this argument with one of the guys that my old man used to write for the paper in Newcastle just last year. And I had this argument with him. I said, why would you pay $5 or whatever it is a week, or I don't even know what it is, for this particular paper? And he said to me, what? Are you saying that your father's journalism isn't worth that a week? I'm saying no. But you're not going to get the same readership. Like, I mean, I don't know how you operate, but when I find an article that I'm interested in and I click on it and it says, hey, you need to pay $7 a year. Like, $7 a year is, like, I know that's, you know, I'm obviously being deliberately obtuse to say that, but $7 a year, I'm not going to pay that. Yeah. Even though it's nothing, I'm not going to pay it. Whereas you could easily make that money through ads, you know, in your article or on the side. You could easily make that money and quadruple or increase your readership tenfold by not having that paywall there. But I don't think they understand that. And he was like, oh, well, you don't think that your old man's journalism's worth that. And I said, no, that's not the point. I think
it's not as simple as that, is it?
No, it's not. Mm. We are in a generation where everything is free and available. And if you try and bring in the old school mentality, you will fail.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I think previously, before the advent of the internet and especially the newer technology of social media, the capital required to mass produce media and to build a media company was immense. So there weren't many firms competing with each other. There was some, you know, there was numerous ones out there, but compared to the infinite amount of YouTube channels, blogs, OnlyFans, Instagram account, everything out there that you can possibly consume media from, you don't need you don't need millions of dollars and a massive printing press. So you don't have to appeal to a gargantuan swath of the population, right? You can be niche. And that is why, especially at the start of the internet, all those newer sort of millennial blogs and the more edgy YouTube channels were gaining so much traction, because they were appealing to a niche or a subculture that mainstream media had previously never appealed to. And mainstream media still can't wrap their head around that. And they still live in this weird bubble. They're starting to comprehend the magnitude of not only the internet but internet creators like ourselves, but they've always been a couple of years behind. You know, they still, I don't think they fully understand how massive this really is. I mean, I just go back to maybe a year or two ago, and you know, a lady that I was involved in some projects I was doing with the mainstream media. Look, I criticize the mainstream media a lot. I'm still I haven't completely closed that door for myself. You know, the older I get, the more I think it's not worth pursuing that. But if certain opportunities came about, you know, I'm an actor, I'm a filmmaker. I would take them, but now I'm more skeptical and hesitant than ever. But going back to this this lady who's, you know, definitely in that world, I was doing a show at the Enmore Theatre. And she went into the small room because she just assumed, oh, internet guy, he's going to be in the small room with 40 people. And then she was shocked to see that I was actually in the 1500 seat main theater. Yeah. She couldn't wrap her head around that. And it just goes to show that, you know, even still, this was 2 years ago. So maybe now, hopefully they've changed, but it just goes to show that the massive disconnect that still exists. And oh, I've been talking about this for years and I'm almost quite sick of talking about it, but it's just so relevant and it's still...
Yeah, you're sick of talking about it. I'm sick of talking about it too, but it's still there.
Exactly. You almost have to.
It's ridiculous. Like, people who watch this video now or watch our channels trust us more with news
than
they do these journalists who run around like they are king shit. No one trusts these cunts, and they shouldn't, because they are all playing to a certain... And, like, you know, with journalists, you have to... Okay, you have to go and study a communications degree, and I haven't done that. Whatever. Like, there are people out there that are far more educated than I. Take Friendly Geordies, for example. Extremely educated young man. Knows what he's talking about with a lot of shit. But, like... there are more people who are trustworthy on the internet than there are in the mainstream media. You could be on OnlyFans jerking yourself off on camera and you are more trustworthy than the nightly news. You know, you're not plugging a current affair that's coming up in 30 minutes after you've just told us a story about six people who have died in a car crash. Like, you are more fucking trustworthy.
OnlyFans does a deal with a current affair, you know, mid-route. You're just like, by the way, go check out Tracy Grimshaw. She's coming up soon.
Mate, I watch A Current Affair every night. It is amazing. It is a hilarious show. Like, it's one of the best
examples. I don't know how you can deal with it. I just can't even watch anything on the... I watch sport, but other than that, I cannot... I just can't do it.
You change your tune when what it comes like... with what you're watching A Current Affair for. If you go in thinking you're going to be educated on something, wrong. You need to go in there thinking that it's a comedy. And you'll have a great time. Yeah. It's marvelous. And you know what, Neil? Mm-hmm. On that topic, I need to go and cook my dinner and get ready because A Current Affair's on in 2 hours.
Coming up, isn't it? Okay.
Tracy.
Well, you have a two-hour routine before Current Affair. That's how... That's how big a fan you are.
The dogs are freaking out downstairs. I've got to go and feed them. But they have been fed today. They just want their dinner. Thank you very much for joining us on the podcast. I like to keep doing it now. And please, where can people find you? I'll put all the links that you tell us about in the description below. But what's your OnlyFans? Go on.
Soon to be, you know, OnlyFans / arse eating brown guy. I don't know, but
Neil before me. Take one of your specials.
There you go. Yeah. There you go. Neil before me from the other way. My YouTube channels are youtube.com/NeilK for the comedy channel and youtube.com/NeilTV for the serious channel. And then it's just my name. So Neil Kulhatka on Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, whatever.
Yeah, ladies and gentlemen, Neil Kulhatka, one of the best getting around. He's a very, very funny comedian. If you can get out and see him in 2025 or whenever we can do stand-up again, that would be fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us here. Make sure you subscribe and check out us, the podcast, rather, on Spotify, iTunes. Well, fuck iTunes. Spotify. If Rogan's there, that's where we need to be. So go and check us out on Spotify. Be a good motherfucker. Peace and release. Be dick stinks. And I'll see you all very soon. Keep it moist. Toodaloo. Au revoir. See you, Neil. Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.